Good evening and a warm welcome to an extraordinary edition of Let's Find Out. Tonight, voices from 30 years of all news. Announcer Alan Burns and anchorman Charlie Osgood started us out.
This is News Radio 88 WCBS New York. Parachuting disaster on Lake Erie. As many as five feared killed as a light plane hits the WCBS radio tower. And a wave of terrorism in Vietnam. Good morning, this is Charles Osgood, News Radio 88.
Jim Donnelly holds the morning co-anchor crown. His inimitable delivery graced these airwaves in the morning for two decades. But there was a price.
For 20 years, I went to bed at 6:30 at night. And luckily, my kids had gotten out of Little League by that time because I worked a more rational schedule at the other place. And for 20 years, I went to bed at 6:30 at night, and I got up at 1:30 in the morning. And I got to work at about 10 minutes to 2, something like that, because there was no traffic.
And you, your voice woke millions of people up over the years. And what did you see as your mission there?
It's the same mission everybody ought to have who's in the journalism business, is to get it accurate, get it right the first time if you can, and keep trying to do it as well as you can, and keep trying to inform people of stuff. Sometimes people think that people know things, and you have to tell them again, because there's so much stuff flowing that people can't register it all and keep it all, and they lose little pieces of it. So when you do the story the next time with the next piece of it, you have to somehow allude back to what you're coming from, even though it may be a week later. Some people don't do that.
Is there a funny moment that stands out, or a moment that makes you laugh when you look back?
There is one particular moment that happened about 15 years ago. No, not 20 years ago now, because I've been retired for 5 years. It was so automatic in the studio, in the newsroom, that one time, with a slip of the skull, I said, "This is Lou Adler." And he said, "And this is Jim Donnelly." And we just kept on going, and nobody noticed. That was a long time ago, but I thought that was humorous.
How many weather forecasts do you think you did? How many time checks do you think you did? How many news stories do you figure you did over the years? And did any impress you? Was there a morning you came in and said, "Oh, my goodness, this is someday"?
One of the days that impresses me, and everybody always talks about assassinations and things like that, was the time when Cardinal Cook was on the West Coast and the Pope died, Pope John Paul I. He'd only been the Pope for 30 days or something.
The September Pope.
The one-minute Pope. So we found Cardinal Cook in California someplace, and I recorded him at 1:45 in the morning, I think it was, and the Cardinal was wonderful with it.
When you look back on your years at CBS, you look back with pride. You obviously have accomplished a lot. You ended up on Morning Drive, which is the highest profile spot. What do you think about when you think about those years?
I thought it was a privilege. I really did, because it was, most of the stuff that I used to do was easy for me to do. It wasn't hard for me to ad lib or cover up. It just wasn't. That's not a particular talent, it's just a gift. And I thought I had that. And I was never afraid to ad-lib about anything, because I kept myself up to date. What was the question?
Well, there was a story that said one time somebody forgot to bring a script into you. Is that true, that you had to ad-lib for a good long time, basically out of your head of the news stories of the day?
I'm sure that happened, because there were times when the people behind you were running 3 or 4 minutes late, and they didn't look at the clock, and you'd come to the next part of the show, broadcast, we used to call it those days, and you didn't have anything in front of you. And you can only do the time check and the weather so many times, believe it or not.
For many years, Ben Farnsworth was heard on afternoons here on WCBS. Farnsworth came to us from Peoria via Boston and remembers being hired.
To me, it was like the answer. I couldn't believe it. And they took me down and they put me into a New York hotel and they said, stay here until you find a place. And it was just like a dream. I would look out of this window at these skyscrapers. And I couldn't believe, I said, I'm in New York. And here's a, you know, here's a kid from the Midwest. And, you know, you see the Macy's Parade on television. You read about Rockefeller Center. You've never been there. You just see it all. And it was just like mind-boggling to me.
When you went in and started working with the people on the staff, what impressed you? To some people, it was the quality of the voices, the writing, and like that. What went through your mind?
The quality of the people and the quality of the management. I think both of them. The people who were there at the time, Jim Donnelly, Lou Adler, Bill Phan, Harvey Hauptman, all of the, and who had been there before, you know, Charlie Osgood and all the great guys who were on the network, they had all gone through it. And, Douglas Edwards would call in with traffic reports as he's driving home, you know, at night, and you pick up the phone, you know, this is Douglas Edwards, and there's a traffic jam on it, you know, and I'm going, I couldn't believe it. Uh-huh. And the management was terrific. They knew that if you were happy personally, you were happy professionally, and they are very, very fond years for me. I mean, all the great managers who were there, Lou Adler and Dave Nelson, and I'm trying to think, Jim McQuaid, Mike Ludlam. I mean, just great guys, great managers, and it was terrific.
You've done television. You're on Channel 4 now. You've done radio, a lot of radio. What is the difference? Is there a difference in the response? Is there a difference in the perception?
They are different media, and I think the greatest difference is the beauty of radio is that you create the pictures. If I say the flames were flashing out of the third story window, consuming this three-story building, if I don't have the pictures on television, that's a very difficult story to tell. On radio, all I have to do is say it. And your flames coming out of the building are different than my flames, are different than a guy who's, driving on the BQE, are different than a guy who's up driving up Route 17 in New Jersey. Everybody has their own image, and the beauty of radio is it's right there in your mind, and you can literally do anything on the radio because you provide the pictures.
Your voice has made an indelible impression, apparently, on a number of people. People still ask me about you now, and you've been gone for how long?
I've been gone now 11, 12 years. I tell you, I know the impact of News Radio 88 because literally not a week goes by that someone doesn't say to me, man, I used to listen to you on the radio, or are you still on the radio? If so, where? Or when are you going to be back on the radio again? Literally not a week goes by, and that's 12 years ago that I was on radio. People still remember. They make an identity with your voice, with your character, with your personality. And, that just shows you the impact of that radio station, in my opinion.
Rita Sands' warm personality and friendly voice embraced WCBS listeners for many years. She remembers her first day.
Here I was coming into the CBS company, but their flagship station, WCBS News Radio 88. And this was the pinnacle. This was top of the heap. The best people worked here, and I was invited to join them as a member of the team. This was very exciting, also very worrisome. You know, I was the first woman anchor there.
Yeah, what was that like? I mean, how did you fit in?
Well, you know, it took a while. To be perfectly honest, it wasn't very easy. I was the first one. A lot of people that listened to news on radio for many years and loyal listeners that they were did not feel terribly comfortable hearing a woman's voice. Why? It's something new, something different. And many people thought they couldn't listen to a woman for hours on end.
But now at our station, it's really the standard. I mean, you started it, and now it's a tradition.
It's a tradition, and I'm sure they've all, each and all of them, have improved upon it and found their own niche. And it's natural now. It's normal now. Unfortunately, it wasn't that way when I joined. So, you know, to speak honestly, it was a little hard. It wasn't easy, but there were enough people there who were smart enough and considerate enough and patient enough to help me along and taught me all I needed, and we became a team. You know, I often felt like when I stepped in that door, there was a conveyor belt whizzing by me, and everybody on board was well-trained, you know, part of a well-oiled machine. And when I stepped off, I had little sensible heels on. I actually had my gloves and looked so ready for work, but not knowing what that meant. And at what point would I step on that conveyor belt and be up to speed with everybody else? So what they did was they basically put me in the back of the line for a while. I started after midnight, got my training there. But eventually it all worked.
What was it like to get on and do an hour of news? I mean, this is, it's a daunting idea.
It's tiring. Yeah, no, that's daunting. Coming from a format, a music format, and 5 minutes of news on the hour, very different. It's a matter of pacing, a matter of control of your breathing and your energy level. These are all the things you don't normally think about when you listen to somebody on the air who's talking about news and interviews and doing live commercials hour after hour after hour. There were times when I was on the air alone for 5 hours. I mean, it's hard to...
That's a long time. Now, listen, you did a lot of double anchor work with a number of people, and you have kind of a box of stuff over here, some photographs. Always good to have photographs on the radio.
Sure.
Now, let's take a look here for a second. There he is, you and Harvey Hauptman.
Harvey Hauptman, see this? We're sitting together side by side.
At typewriters.
At typewriters, Rich.
No computers.
And not electric, manual. This one, as I recall, had the N out. Remember that. But there's Harvey. Harvey, you know, for many years, a wonderful and talented anchor man at News Radio 88, and he was also a reporter, and then in the latter years, a business reporter, quite good at that as well. So this is when we worked together. Here's Bob Vaughn, and I hold this up for your listeners.
One of the great voices.
Oh, you know his southern style, and you work with him, again, hour after hour. We were saying, the weather was hot and humid, and he would be kind of languid, and even the choice of, he was wonderful, warm. He brought to news a certain kind of relaxed attitude, a southern charm. His charm was different to work with, and really, we began to mirror each other. Every anchor person, and I think I worked with five different male co-anchors over the years, at least five, each one brought to the table a different, unique personality, a style of working, a way of writing, and a way of interacting with me. And
I see another one down here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And who is that?
This is Tom Franklin. This was the man I worked with during the last number of years at News Radio 88. And Tom,
Mr. Smooth, wasn't he?
Oh, was he ever. Great sense of humor. Oh, such a competent man. Warm, funny, though. His sense of humor, I don't suppose most listeners will remember that because most of it, frankly, was off the air in between cuts. But he had a way, if you remember, Tom, the way he used to do sound effects, and we would replay stories in his mind, but he would replay them with sound effects, and it would keep us laughing and keep us going for our 4 hours on the air together, and then he did one by himself after that. Just a great privilege to work with him, really with all of them. Let's see who else we've got here.
Well, we had, you worked for many years with Gary Moore, did you not?
He is. Yep, Gary, when he had no beard. Look at this. He's
no beard.
No beard, and his hair was dark and semi-shoulder length. There we were. Well, mine was even, wait a minute.
This is his longer
his
than yours.
His is longer than mine. But we worked, this is one of our original studios at News Radio 88. You see kind of how old-fashioned some of the equipment was.
Mm-hmm. Some of it's still there.
Is it? Is it really?
One thing I wanted to point out was that you actually kept all of the listener mail you ever got.
It's all six letters.
No. You have boxes of it here.
Well, I do. I never thought going into an all-news format that we would attract any kind of listenership or any kind of loyalty among listeners, that they would see a personal person behind the news. But, you know, even then, there were people who were drawn to newscasters for reasons other than were apparent to us at the time. I think we keep good company with people. We are a steady stream of information. We're a window to the world. And the manner in which we deliver sometimes some rather difficult and upsetting news is as important. It shows them that we're sincere, we're caring, we're real, and because we're live, we're alive.
You did both television and radio. And was there a differing response?
Yes, very much so. You mean among the listeners and viewers?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's you don't get the sense of I didn't. I certainly wouldn't speak for all. The loyalty among radio listeners is profound and touching. Television, not quite so involved. And one perfect example, I was covering a story for a network television in Philadelphia, And a woman ran over to me in the street and asked for my autograph, which I didn't get asked terribly often, and I thought, well, I was very touched. Of course I would comply. But she said to me, no. She crossed out the name of the other station, and she said, would you write your name over WCBS News Radio 88? Because all the years I listened to you and to finally meet you, she said, this means something to me. I wondered if you would sign your name. And you see what that says? The television meant nothing to her. She didn't associate that connection to someone that she had listened to or watched. She associated a friendship with somebody from radio. That meant more to me than anything.
One of Rita's co-anchors was Gary Moore, who listeners will recognize is still working on the air here at WCBS. He was working at the inception of All News.
I started out actually as a stringer from the very beginning, from the first day. I was in Trenton, New Jersey, working for a Philadelphia radio station. When I found out from a friend that WCBS was going to an all-news format, and so I contacted them, and I offered to string for them from Trenton. And they said, fine, let's do it. And then 3 months later, the staff was expanded, and I came on as a staff reporter. That was probably November of 1967.
That's amazing to think that far back. Do you have any clear recollection of what was going on then?
It was a very, very exciting time. I mean, this station was spending money hand over fist in an effort to get the best possible talent available on the air in the shortest possible time to beat the competition. I mean, we were arrogant. We had this kind of a screw you kind of attitude about things. You know, we went out and got stories that nobody else was interested in. We were pugnacious and kind of bulldogish about it. And it got us listeners. And it not only got us listeners, it drew more talent from outside the station, people who wanted to work here because we were so tough. We went out and got the news.
Now, you went to Woodstock and never came back. Well, tell us about that.
I went to Woodstock to cover the event as a reporter for WCBS, and, oh, God, that was exciting. That was one of the most exciting stories ever, and it lasted over days. And the excitement of it, the color, the sounds, the kids, the music, I mean, it just struck something in me. And this was 1969, and then in 1976, I moved to Woodstock. I needed all that time to recover from the event.
Well, and the other thing was that you anchored for a while with Rita Sands. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. What kind of an experience was that? Always sounded like you were having fun on the air.
It was great. Rita was such a wonderful person to work with. We had such a great time. Laughs, a lot of very serious moments, a good chemistry. It was so much fun to work with her. It was midday. We didn't really feel the pressure of morning drive or afternoon drive. We kind of were allowed to go our own way and find our own level. And it worked. I mean, it worked for both of us, and it worked for the listeners. It worked for the station. It was just and for me, it was just probably the most exciting extended period of time in my career.
So how do you feel altogether about your time at WCBS, about your career here?
It's hard to imagine that 30 years have gone by. I mean, when I first came here, I was I was 27 years old. I was meeting some of the stars of radio, some of my boyhood heroes from radio for the first time, Charles Osgood, Ed Bradley, Lou Adler. I mean,
doesn't get any better than that.
Pat Summerall was our first sports director. Dave Marish was here. Oh, what an exciting time that was. And look back over those 30 years. It seems as if it's more like 30 days. I mean, I know I've aged. I look in the mirror, and I know I've aged, and I have all this experience behind me. But in thinking back over it, the time just seems to compress. This is by far the best job I have ever had. And I have enjoyed working here for 30 years, and it just seems like just the snap of a finger.
A blink of an eye.
The blink of an eye.
Another of Rita's co-anchors, Harvey Hauptman.
You came to WCBS what year?
1960. October the 3rd, 1960.
So this is long before All News.
Right. At that time, my first job was writing editorials for the station. And then I later became producer-writer on a program called Up to the Minute that starred Kenneth Banghart, which was essentially the seed that became the all-news format.
When you decided to do all-news, what was going through the minds of the staff? I mean, what were you thinking about?
I know I, for one, was frightened, and I think everybody else was. Not too many people would admit it, but I felt there was no way that we could fill up all this time with news. I mean, in the old days,
if there was nothing, you could always put a record on or something like that. But we were going to have to do news all this time. You know, it was scary. I was frightened.
And now we've filled 30 years with news, and it's, is it like the blink of an eye, or is it like a long time ago?
A sort of halfway in between. When you get to be my age, time kind of telescopes. And I've been thinking about some of the major stories that happened while I was there and some that I covered myself. Of course, there was the Vietnam War with all the turmoil that that involved. The attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, the shooting of Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King. We had our own trials and tribulations and turmoils right within the metropolitan area. Plane crashes, bombs going off in lockers at airports. It seemed that we were constantly on the go. And it was the kind of feeling that once we got established and once we really became rolling as an all-new station, there were those days where it was kind of ordinary and you just went through a routine, but you did it well. But if a story broke and you threw out the format and then everybody was flying and, oh God, it was exciting then. Oh, it was wonderful.
Now, looking back, is there a favorite moment? Is there a favorite story? What about some of the people you worked with?
Oh, I worked with some greats. I have to think of Steve Flanders, who was my best friend at the radio station when we worked there. And some of the great anchors, I'm thinking of people with wonderful voices and wonderful news ability, like Lou Adler and Charlie Osgood and Bob Vaughn and Jim Donnelly. And please forgive me if I'm slighting anybody, but there were so many of them. Bob Glenn, Bill Phan, Palmer Payne. I could go on and on.
And you spoke of your co-anchor, Rita Sands.
Oh, I can't forget Rita. I think that was my most pleasurable time in radio, working with her. She's a wonderful human being, a very, very funny person, delightful to be with, and I think one of the best broadcasters there is in radio.
Proud to have worked at News Radio 88 at WCBS?
Oh, yeah. You know, people talk about CBS and say, they talk about the Murrow Boys. Well, we weren't exactly the Murrow Boys. We came a little bit later, and we never had the privilege of working with Ed Murrow, but we came from that same tradition. And I think we played our part in carrying that tradition through.
One of the original anchors on WCBS News Radio 88 was Bill Phan, whose authoritative voice delivered the world's news here for nearly 30 years. But like everyone else, he had to get into the station by proving himself.
I was given a name, so I sent an audition tape, which did not work out very well at all. I got a very rapid response saying, "We thank you very much for your audition tape, but you don't really have the standards that we want as far as," and this was a vocal standard they were talking about, and they said, "If you would like to take the time, we promise nothing, we kind of like the way Roger Mudd sounds." And so I went right back to my tape recorder, not right back, actually, I listened to a lot of Roger Mudd tapes, And I did my best. I guess our timbre is fairly close, and I sent back another tape trying to sound like Roger Mudd. It didn't work very well at all. I thought I sounded like Roger Mudd, but they didn't think I sounded. But they were very nice and got back to me very rapidly and said, I'm sorry, you don't cut it, but give us another one, and I had no hope whatsoever, but I said, what the hell? And so I made another tape, and I just tried to, how do you try to sound like yourself? Anyway, I made another tape, I sent it back, and they said, we've got an airline ticket for you to come in and audition.
How did you feel when you came to New York? I mean, you were in Minneapolis, and what feelings struck you?
Well, I'd been a broadcaster. I was a news director. I was a television anchorman in Minneapolis, not a dainty market, a very nice place to work. Still love it. But I was awestruck when I got here. It was something else because I was coming into a world of, immediate things. I'm not talking about Walter Cronkite's network or anything like that, but I was talking about an immediate radio station in which I was going to work with Pat Summerall. I would work with Charlie Osgood, Ed Bradley, people like who were already working there at this time or were about to work there anyway, but they were there for the most part.
So it was an amazing place to work, and the standards, I guess, that were set were very, very high in terms of what?
Oh, the quality, the writing quality was something unbelievable. We had, you'd walk in and you'd look, you may see 15 writers sitting at any given time, and you as an anchor person coming on to do an hour, for example, you might be responsible for 3 minutes of news, your writing. By the time it got through the editor, you were lucky if you had your name left. He might have changed your name before it was done, because the quality of writing, they would not let anything that was shoddy go through.
When you went to work in the morning or the afternoon or the night, and when you told people where you worked, what kind of feeling did you have about the place? Was this the top of the mountain?
You couldn't get any higher as far as I was concerned. As I said, I'd been in broadcasting a long time. I'd been in television. Now I had come down to radio. Oh, by no means. No means did you come down to radio by going to WCBS 88. It was the epitome. It was. There was a tremendous amount of personal pride on the part of, I think, everybody who was there.
Neil Bush is still flying traffic for WCBS. He was here on day one 30 years ago. Neil's closest call was a close encounter with a Canada goose.
Really the most significant in-flight emergency that I've had flying not only New York but my whole career. And that happened one night in November around Thanksgiving. It was pitch black outside. We were flying along at about 120 miles an hour just inside Nassau County. And without any warning at all, there was just kind of an explosion in the cockpit of the helicopter. And that explosion was a goose, a mature, probably 10-pound or more Canadian goose coming through the windscreen of the helicopter. Fortunately for me, there were two of us in the helicopter. Mike Dillon was in the left seat, I was in the right seat. The goose hit Mike, knocking off his headset and his glasses. I was able to grab the goose, get it under control, put it on the floor, put my foot on the thing, while Mike got the helicopter back under control. We told LaGuardia what had happened. LaGuardia said, I'll stop the departures, take it right over the airport to Ridgefield Park, which we did. We landed at the heliport and caught our breath and thanked God and put the helicopter in the hangar. The next morning, Mike and I and some other people came back to the hangar to look at the damage. The goose was still in a bag, a plastic bag that we had put it in the previous night. We opened the hangar door, walked over to the bag. I started opening up the bag and there were all kinds of fluids and stuff in there, just as a mess. All of a sudden, the bag shook, the goose jumped up and took off and flew out here and landed on the Hackensack River with about 15 more of his buddies that were sitting out there.
A real phoenix, huh?
That was one tough bird.
So, looking back on this flying career of yours, how do you feel? What word would you attach to it?
Paradise. Paradise. I dream about flying when I go to sleep at night. I think about it when I wake up. I do it every day. It's the greatest pleasure in life to be able to fly over the greatest city in the world and talk about what you see. I mean, isn't that a dream?
The dream and the reality that WCBS News Radio 88 represent are the products not only of those on the air, but also of the writers, technical, financial, sales, and management staff. Above all, we are indebted to you, our loyal listeners. We say thanks and stay tuned. Our producers are Tom Kaminsky, Irina Lalaman, Tony Gatto, and Lou Geiserman. Executive producer, Dan Griffin. Technical help tonight from the eminent Bill Tynan. I'm WCBS reporter Rich Lamb, and I've been honored to have been here 19 and a half years. Please listen again next Sunday night at 8:30, shortly after our radio simulcast of 60 Minutes, for the next edition of Let's Find Out.